We get back to new folks. This is very normal. We're going to have a mission board, and we're going to give folks just a few minutes to get started, to join the call, and then we'll get started. So, there we go. Thank you.
If you're not speaking, please mute your microphone or get some chatter back in the background. Thank you. Are y'all ready?
Good afternoon. This is Wendy Norville. Welcome to the press conference with IMB. Thank you all for joining us. David Platt, of course, has just spoken to all of our staff in a town hall meeting and to our missionaries worldwide, and then after that we communicated with you. And in the room here in the virtual press conference, we also have several of our other leadership. Sebastian Traeger is our Executive Vice President, and he'll be available to answer some of the questions as well. Let me tell you just a little bit of what we're going to do. David is going to share with you for basically the same information in a little bit shorter form of what we shared with our staff and missionaries this morning. So that's going to take about 30, 40 minutes. We have received some of your questions, and we've received questions from some of you, and we will then address those questions. And then if there's time, we'll open up the mic for other questions. So thank you for joining us, and David, go right ahead and just share your heart.
And I would just add my thanks for you all taking time hear my heart, mind, and light, all that's on my mind in light of what we have been sharing with our personnel this morning. So I'll try to make it as brief as possible. There's a lot that obviously goes into what we are doing right now, and so I want to be as clear as possible about these things. So the way I laid it out to our personnel this morning was in the form of present realities and a future roadmap. The present realities on the positive side is that giving by Christians and churches towards missions and ministries has increased over recent years. So we know that many types of gospel-centered missions and ministry organizations are growing financially right now, and we are grateful for that and give glory to God for that. We never in any way want to compete with or want to be seen in competition with any other gospel-centered missions and ministry organizations. We want all boats to rise, and by God's grace, the same thing is true for the IMB. Giving is up in the IMB, toward the IMB, particularly from Southern Baptist churches. Over the last 4 years, we've seen increases in both our Lottie Moon Christmas offerings as well as cooperative program giving to the IMB, which is the primary way in which churches give to Southern Baptist entities. So we are just praising God for His provision and thanking God for the church's generosity toward IMB and a variety of churches, gospel center missions and ministry organizations. The challenge we're addressing is that despite increased giving to the IMB over the last 4 years, for example, we have consistently spent more money than has been given to us each year. And so I'm gonna share a variety of numbers with you, and they're an approximation, so they're not exact numbers. I want to keep it as simple as possible, but also as transparently as possible, just to be clear. This is, again, what we've communicated to all of our personnel. In 2009, we hit kind of our high mark of missionaries on the field at 5,600. And since that time, we have decreased to about 4,800 missionaries. And we've had a place to get to 4,200 missionaries. So we've got about 4,800 now. And we've had a plan in place put in place by previous leadership to get to 4,200 missionaries. And the reason for that decline is our inability to financially support our current mission force in the field. So we've used a number, even at the SBC, when I was reporting to the SBC, shared a number of $21 million, which is the amount of money we budgeted to spend last year over what we brought in. So the easiest way to look at that number is to think through Lottie Moon, Christmas offering. Our goal for that offering was $175 million, but we only brought in $154 million. So we had $21 million of a shortfall in our budget. So that money obviously had to come from somewhere. So we drew from our contingency reserves and sales of local properties that we have to cover that shortfall. Well, what we realized is, as we got into the budgeting process this year, even since the SBC, that not only did we have that $21 million shortfall in 2014, but we were also using global property sales to cover some of our expenses. In 2014, that was to the tune of $18 million. So when you add those two numbers together, you realize that in total, in 2014, we were spending $39 million more than people were giving to us. And that was just 1 year. As I think you may have seen, over multiple years, going back to 2010, we've been doing this. As an organization, have been spending more money than people have been giving to us. And so since 2010, we as an organization have spent a combined $210 million more than people have given to us. Now, by God's grace, we have been able to cover those costs through reserves, through property sales, but we know we don't have property we can just keep selling forever. And we know we don't want to get to a dangerous point when it comes to depleting reserves. So I want to be clear in describing all this, and I would ask you all to be clear in communicating all this, that my aim is in no way to question decisions by previous leadership across the IMB during these years. As I mentioned, previous leaders put in place a plan to slowly reduce our number of missionaries through normal attrition, through reduced new missionary appointments, while using reserves and global property sales that we've had to keep as many missionaries as possible on the field. A decision, a strategic decision was made to use those reserves and global property sales to keep those missionaries on the field. And I praise God for the resources that He provided to make that plan possible. I praise God for leaders who chose not just to fill those resources, but to spend them for the spread of the gospel among the unreached. There are people who have been reached for the gospel and have come to Christ over these last years because missionaries were able to stay on the field and because we used resources we had to keep them there. What we've come to now is the realization that that plan is no longer viable in light of current reality. So IMB can't continue to overspend as we have. We don't have the reserves, global property sales to be able to do that. So for the sake of short-term financial responsibility and long-term organizational stability, we want to be in a position in which we can operate within our budget, where we're not continuing to deplete reserves, where we can make sure those reserves are at a responsible level. So we have spent hours together on our knees, praying at a table, discussing options, crunching numbers in order to discern next steps. How do we address immediately and simultaneously both budget shortfalls and low contingency reserves? How do we address them both? We looked at a multiplicity of options, but none of those options that we looked at would bring about a balanced budget fast enough or be feasible to implement in the short term than the one we've come to. So with a really heavy heart this morning with our personnel, I reported that we believe the only viable way forward for us involves a significant reduction in our number of both staff and field personnel. So personnel, I think someone has sent in a question, is approximately 80% of our budget. And while there are relatively small places to conserve here and there, that obviously represents the bulk of our budget. And we won't be able to get the short-term financial responsibility, long-term organizational sustainability without making a major adjustment in our number of personnel now. So to be specific, in order to get to a healthy place financially at the IMD, we believe we need to reduce the total number of our staff and field personnel by 600 to 800 people. That would put us in a financial position where we can move forward into the future. For obvious reasons, words really can't describe how difficult a reality that is to communicate to our IMD family. These aren't just figures. These are faces. These are brothers and sisters who have spent and are spending their lives in various capacities to spread the gospel among those who've never heard it. And I see them. I want to support, serve them every way I can, we can, for the spread of the gospel through them. Not only that, I want to see multitudes more people spreading the gospel alongside them in the future. But these numbers represent a reality that I can't ignore personally, and we can't ignore organizationally. So I have been sharing and shared with the SBC recently a vision for partnering with churches to empower limitless missionary teams to make disciples and multiply churches among unreached peoples and places for the glory of God. And that vision remains. But in order to be in a healthy position to walk into that kind of future, we've got to get to a healthy place in the present financially. So the roadmap that I laid out this morning for our personnel involves a complete reevaluation on multiple levels. First, on a personal level, I'm encouraging every single person in our organization to humbly and openly ask the Lord, what are you leading me to do? I talk oftentimes about a blank check. With our lives before God, just total surrender, with no strength attached, saying we'll do whatever He wants us to do. I know that's how all of our personnel got in the place where they're serving right now. They surrendered to God with no strength attached, and they've gone wherever He's led them. So in that vein, I'm asking each of them to put the blank check back on the table in a fresh way, today and in the coming days, and say, God, I trust that you have sovereignly led me to the point where I am now, and I trust that you'll sovereignly lead me from the point I am now. So how, where are you leading me to live and work for the sake of your name in the days ahead? Knowing that, yes, 800 people in the days to come are going to step aside from IMB, but that doesn't mean they're going to be stepping on the sidelines of mission. Instead, they're going to be moving into a new phase of involvement in mission. God is not sidelining anyone in this process. Just how it plays out and how it looks in our lives and their lives may be different. So we're going to be asking that question personally and then organizationally. Just asking, what are you leading us to do, God? And I've known that we need to reset much of our structure, many of our systems in the IMB, and we've taken some initial and strategic steps toward that over the last year, but these realities ratchet that need to a whole other level. So what I did is I outlined a two-phase plan that we will carry out over the next 6 months. Phase one is a voluntary retirement incentive, an official program by which any personnel who meets certain eligibility requirements can choose to retire from the IMD and receive a particular financial benefit in their retirement. Even as I introduced that to our personnel earlier today. I know that some may wonder how giving some of the most experienced and seasoned personnel an opportunity to retire is a wise first step in addressing budget needs. To be sure, this is not an ideal step, but quite frankly, there are no ideal steps at this point. The reason we're starting with voluntary retirement incentives is because VRIs are established to provide personnel who may be considering retirement at some point in their future an opportunity with incentives to take that step in the present. We are stressing that it's indeed going to be completely voluntary. We will not in any way encourage or influence any personnel to elect or reject the VRI. It is totally up to the discretion of an individual or missionary family who is eligible for the VRI to decide whether or not to elect it or reject it. We are already working with all of our supervisors and managers across the organization to make sure that this is totally voluntary at every point. We also want to be as generous as we can. We're going to work in every, we are working in every way right now possible to use every possible means we have to provide for the men and women who take this incentive. So the details of eligibility and this incentive are still being finalized, and we'll be making those details available to our personnel in a couple of weeks in another town hall meeting. And then after that, eligible personnel will receive a specific packet of information that includes the details of how this incentive will affect them. And I don't know all the details of what that incentive will look like, but I am guaranteeing them that this incentive will be as generous as it can possibly be. It will be the best option we can offer. And obviously we've got to keep in mind we're in a tight financial position, but that reality creates all the more urgency for this program, because the longer we wait, the less generous we can be. With every passing month, we will lessen our capacity for generosity. We want to be generous. We want to honor every single brother or sister who takes this VRI. We want to honor not just their past years of service to the IMB, but knowing that many of them will retire but continue working in different capacities for the glory of God in different ways. We want to honor and affirm their future role and mission in the days to come, even beyond the IMB. And as they're making this decision, we want to make sure they have time to make it. As soon as they receive those packets, they'll have at least 45 days after that to decide whether or not to receive it. And then once some decide to take it, they'll have, we want to provide them time to make a smooth transition. So all our personnel who take the VRI will continue on payroll through December, and that will provide them an opportunity to think through potential transition plans, and then even especially for our field personnel, to think through the complications and the challenges of transition plans even into 2016. So that's phase one of the roadmap we're walking. Phase two is what I'm calling concluding the reset. So phase one will take us to the end of the year. But while this VRI is being implemented, we're going to simultaneously be working hard towards phase two, which will involve concluding this reset we've begun over the last year as we consolidate how we support missionaries, we recalibrate how we mobilize new missionaries and churches, as we assess the effects of 600 to 800 less personnel in the IMD, and trusting the sovereignty of God, leaning on the Spirit of God, regarding where we will be working in the days to come, and what kind of work we'll be doing in different areas accordingly. And we're re-envisioning all the training we're doing of churches and Christians and missionaries and nationals in the 21st century. So all of that we'll be working toward in the end of 2015. And then, early in 2016, our aim is to bring this reset to a conclusion by making any necessary announcements regarding the structure of the IMB, any updates, and at that time we'll work through any further personnel adjustments that may need to be made. In light of the number of personnel who respond to the VRI over the next few months, in light of any structural changes that emerge in this reset, and in light of any additional information available concerning our budget and reserves at that point. So on a personal level, again, in light of the blank check I mentioned earlier, our desire is to approach any further personnel I can pause for a second. If somebody's not muted, and I just want to make sure everybody can hear. So just make sure you're on mute if on your phone. I think you solved it. What I was saying on a personal level in our organization, our desire is to approach any further personnel adjustments beyond the DRI. Executive mute, so just if you could please check and make sure that you're muted, that would be very helpful for everybody on the call. Our desire is to approach any further personnel adjustments beyond the DRI by first providing personnel with an opportunity to voluntarily transition into work outside the IMB. It would definitely be premature to define details of any such program at this point, but the idea would be to allow personnel across our organization an opportunity to, in essence, raise their hands and say, I believe the Lord's leading me to something outside of the IMD. And we definitely won't be able to give as generous of an incentive as the DRI to such people, but in the same spirit I mentioned earlier, we would want to be as generous as we possibly can, honoring the way the Lord would use our brothers and sisters on mission in the days ahead. We want to provide as smooth a transition as possible wherever the Lord leads them. So beyond that voluntary hand-raising, together we're going to flesh out the effects of consolidation and recalibration across the IMD and discern different roles and responsibilities that all our personnel will have in the future. Many will continue with the exact same roles and responsibilities they have now. Other personnel could potentially redeploy and or relocate either within the IMB or beyond the IMB. Some people may wonder, well, what if not enough people volunteer to leave? Will people be asked to leave the IMB? And those are questions we would address when necessary. But what I told our personnel for now is during this process and in the days to come across our IMB family, we must hold one another to high standards in our work. Much of the rationale behind all that I'm sharing is the realization that IMB cannot employ anyone and everyone who wants to work with IMB. Consequently, we must make sure that every position we have is best for the mission. We must make sure that the best people for those positions are in those positions and giving their best effort every day. I certainly don't want to speculate on all the potential possibilities that lie ahead, but our aim is to have clarity in the first 2 months of 2016 regarding what personnel will be where, and that will enable us to conclude this reset. All toward the end that we can be in a position to move forward with innovative vision in the days ahead, with God-sized, God-directed, God-dependent vision, aggressively exploring how can we best mobilize, train, and support limitless missionary teams from churches in North American nations to reach the unreached with the gospel. I want to be a part of a Moravian-type mission movement among churches in the SBC and beyond the SBC, for that matter, in our day, as multitudes more of them who lose the gospel take that gospel to people who've never heard it. Along the way, we as IMB want to be wise stewards of our resources, represented most clearly in the days to come by a balanced budget with responsible reserves. We want to operate with a high sense of accountability to the churches we serve, the people God's called us to reach, ultimately to God Himself. Again, let me emphasize that this announcement and what we're walking through right now is not in any way a reflection of a lack of accountability or responsibility in the past. We, as I said, previous leadership put in place a plan to draw down the number of missionaries on the field over time in a way that we've now realized is not getting us to where we need to be as quickly as we maybe once thought. And so we're putting ourselves in a position for the future that means we have to take necessary steps in the present. We want to be in a healthy place in the present in order to move forward in the future with innovative vision, wise stewardship, and high accountability. So that's the overview of what I walked through with our personnel today, and I, as well as other leaders in the room, would be glad to answer any questions that that you all have. I know Wendy has a variety of questions that have already been sent in, so I think we're going to start there, and either I or some of our other leaders will be glad to answer them, and hopefully this will be a productive time.
David, thank you. Thanks for sharing your heart and taking time to do this. We have received several questions. As I mentioned earlier, of course, David is here, Sebastian Traeger, our Kentucky Vice President in the room, Clyde Nutter, many of you know through the years, is here in the room. And so we will try to do the best we can to answer the questions that you sent. Some of you have sent several of you sent questions that are similar, and so I'm not just going to do verbatim. I've tried to kind of group them together to make sure we answer your questions, but not just go over everything. But David, you said something in your press release, and I want to make sure that it was heard. Our press release said that the vast majority of the budget goes to personnel percentage. Can you give me an approximation of what percentage of the budget is our personnel cost?
It's approximately 80% of our budget is personnel. Again, using approximate, not exact numbers, but approximately 80% of our budget.
And you also said in the press release or in the FAQs that there will be about 300 new missionaries sent this year and approximate number next year. How does that compare to previous years?
We have, as I mentioned, with the previous plan that's been in place, have gradually drawn down that number over the course of many years. That has stayed stable over the last couple of years, but the 300, which we are committed, approximately 300 we're committed to sending out over the next year and likely comparable after that, I would say the height. And Clyde can correct me if I'm wrong here, the height, at one point there were 1,200 missionaries sent out in 1 year. But that would have been what year, Clyde?
That would have been early 2000s, probably 2002.
There was a point where the IMB had more money than people when it came to... now we're at a point where we have so many people coming to the IMB saying we want to go, and the challenge is figuring out how to help them get overseas. And so that's why, again, why we need to retool and restructure to be able to create as many pathways as possible for as many qualified people to take the gospel to those who have never heard it.
You also mentioned that London offering has increased in recent years. Do you have a ballpark figure?
So this is Sebastian Traeger. If you look at Lottie Moon over the last 4 years, kind of an average number, so this kind of just looks at just taking the average, is increasing at about 0.6% per year.
Okay. And under the plan that we have, when do we anticipate the budget being balanced?
So it's going to depend on, of course, how many people take the voluntary retirement and what the specifics of their circumstances, and it's also going to depend on kind of phase two. So, but when you put those into account, that's kind of a detail level. But if you look at it at a big picture, from a balanced budget perspective, we're looking at. By the end of 2016 and into 2017 is when our monthly, when we'll be balanced on a monthly basis.
And you're talking about balanced budget, but talk about numbers. David, perhaps you can answer this. How many missionaries do we envision having once the staff reduction is complete? I've heard you talk about limitless missionaries.
Well, the challenge is when we have in our personnel, both staff and field personnel, and all of them are together in this process we're walking through. So we don't know exactly how many people either with the voluntary retirement or voluntary hand raising after that, and then just as we work through any further personnel adjustments, what that will look like when it comes to percentage exactly of staff and field personnel. So as I mentioned earlier, we've got approximately 4,800 missionaries right now. And then you add on top of that, in our staff is about 450 people approximately. So that would be the total in the organization. And so we're going to need in that number to draw down 600 to 800 out of that total number. So that's not just 600 to 800 people in the field, but 600 to 800 people in the in our personnel. So again, the goal being to get to a healthy financial position in the present so that we can explore all sorts of pathways for people to go as missionaries with the gospel of the nation. So the way I would describe it is, when we think of missionary, we often think traditionally of a full-time church planter, fully supported, either by raising their own support or through a mechanism like the IMB, getting full support from a coalition of churches. And we are going to continue to send full-time church planters who are fully supported. At the same time, we know, and it's common sense, that there's a cap on our ability, on any organization's ability, to send people in just that way. Even if our income from churches were to double over the next year, which we would love for that to happen, but we would still have a cap on our ability to send a certain number of full-time, fully supported church planters. So what we want to do is we want to take that cap off, which means we want to, in the days to come, consider all of the different avenues that God has created in His sovereign grace for multitudes more people to go. Like professionals and the opportunities that exist for professionals to work overseas, to be paid by companies to work overseas, and to live gospel-centered lives there that are involved in the spread of the gospel for the accomplishment of the Great Commission. For students to explore, instead of paying for school here, why not pay for school in another part of the world? Why not even take advantage of full scholarships that are available to students, for students, American students, to study in international universities, and use funding from that to then live in that international setting and be a part of a church planning team that's making disciples among the young people, even retirees, to think through how to use income that they have from our government here to live in other places around the world for the spread of the gospel. So these are those natural, I would say supernatural opportunities that God has opened up for many people to serve. And what we want to do is not just think about missionaries exclusively in those terms, but at both ends. Think through the full-time, fully supported church planner surrounded by missionary team members who are professionals and students and retirees all together working for the spread of the gospel among those who've never heard it. It's that kind of vision that we're working toward, but in order to get to that place in the future, again, we need to be in a healthy place in the present. So our total personnel, again, will be needing to decrease total personnel by 6,800 with a view toward, in the days to come, having limitless men and women who are involved in the mission force represented by the IMD.
David, you a two-part follow-up to that kind of feeds into this. If we use the words recalibrate, re-envision, reset, will there come a time that folks don't accept, enough folks don't accept the voluntary retirement incentive, that we will have to do a further reduction of layoffs? And if so, when do we anticipate that being completed?
We are not even speculating on details of what that would look like at this point. Our desire is to walk wisely through the step right in front of us, which is the voluntary retirement incentive. Once we determine how many personnel respond to that VRI, And once we, and we're simultaneously kind of working toward that phase two as we think through any structural changes that are needed in the IMB. And as we do that, then once we have information from the VRI and have information from any further voluntary hand raising, as people say, you know, I believe the Lord's leading me into sort of place of service in the days to come. Once we have that information, it will certainly have an effect on any further steps at that point, including any further personnel adjustments.
Someone keeps not being on mute. If you could make sure your phone's on mute, that would be very helpful. Sebastian, I'd like to turn to you and talk a little bit about, we've had several questions about the property sales and things. Any idea of how much income previous property sales have generated?
So the previous property sales have totaled, is basically the amount David mentioned, the amount of money over the last 6 years that the giving that has come into us has been short. The amount we've spent has totaled $210 million. So from 2010 until what we're projecting till the end of the year, and that has all been, that gap has been made up through reserves and property sales. And so we, again, praise God for the bold leadership in the past that would not sit on buildings, but would make sure that people are staying on the field. And the point we want to keep reiterating is, you know, we think it was a bold step to say we care more about keeping people on the field than buildings, but that's just not sustainable anymore going forward into the future. And so we're at a point where we can't continue that strategy.
And several questions have come. I'm going to try to group them all, and Sebastian, turn to you again about how do we report our finances to the SBC, the SBC meetings report perhaps didn't lay this whole out, when did the IMB leadership become aware of the budget deficit, why was it not reported to the SBC meetings, so just kind of address all of that if you would.
Yeah, I'll just start with just in general how our reporting works. So, you know, our audited financials and budgets, as well as other financial information, are transparently reported to SBC constituents, such as, you know, our Board of Trustees, the SBC Executive Committee, and the SBC Convention. And in every one of those phases, there's opportunity for those groups to ask questions. Of course, the most important group that we relate to and the group that is always aware of our finances, of course, the IMB trustees. They're charged as a whole by the SBC to give oversight for the IMB to the larger constituency. And they're presented with audited financials every year and have been aware of not only the shortfalls, but also leadership's plan to address them. And so trustees, again, are the ones who ultimately have been aware of this. In terms of, and so they've been very aware of what our reserves were and our ability at the time and in the past to be able to sell properties to meet our budget. And that was a decision, again, a bold decision to keep people on the field rather than keep those properties. In terms of when, what's been reported to the SBC and the SBC Executive Committee, again, leadership meets with the SBC Executive Committee multiple times a year, and in that process, audited financials are shared with the Executive Committee through our annual report that we give. That information is made available at all times.
Okay, and talk a little bit about the audit reports that folks have available and why there might be some differences in the audit reports of the gain or loss in total net assets.
One thing we've tried to do, and David said pretty clearly, is what we've tried to do is, obviously when you're looking at audited financial statements, you're looking at very particular ways to present information that meet accounting standards. And what we've tried to do is more simply use two phrases, basically cash flow and reserve. So cash flow is what we bring in through giving minus what we spend, and that's been a negative number. And reserves, of course, which we're using to include not just cash reserves, but also property sales. So we've tried very clearly in our communication to use just words that are more understood by people, understanding kind of cash flow and reserves. But looking at the technical document, the audited financial statements, when you look at those net asset increases or decreases, the thing to keep in mind is when we have properties, those are not considered assets because they've already been expensed. Again, I'm getting very technical, but they're not assets because they were expensed in the past. But once those properties are sold and then converted into cash, that cash becomes an asset. So we don't have every property on our balance sheet as an asset because it's an expense. But once it's turned into cash, it does become an asset, which is why if you look at our audited financial statements, and there's a note. So, for example, in the financial statement that just came out for 2014, you'll see a note 13. And in every financial statement, I don't know, there's always note 13, but there's always a note in it which articulates what I just described.
Let me turn back just a little bit on, another question that just came in, Sebastian, is, could you describe, give us an idea of what kind of properties we might be selling? So what are some examples of properties that we have sold?
So a lot of times we might purchase a property for a missionary to live in. And so those properties, some of which were purchased many years in the past, have appreciated many times over. And the reason we sell them is because they are no longer strategic for our use. So the missionaries don't live there anymore, we don't have a work in that place, but we've kept those properties. So that's generally speaking the example of properties you sell. Properties which have been lived in by people but are no longer necessary for the work that we do.
Okay. David, let me turn back to you. I have a question that says IMB traditionally or historically has been one of the most transparent agencies as members of the media until recently. You mentioned this plan includes high accountability. With such a major reset of the organization, will we now return to allowing Southern Baptist journalists to cover committee that proceed?
I'd be glad to answer that. And let me clarify, too, when I'm using high accountability language, that's not in any way to say that there's been no accountability in the past. The reason I'm using that language, this is very important to clarify, is when I say high accountability to the churches we serve, when I look at the world right now, I see a lot of people, 2.8 billion, who have little to no knowledge of the gospel. They need to hear the gospel. I see many Christians who are wanting to go and take the gospel to them, and many churches that are wanting to send people. And IMB, I want to be accountable for not in any way being a bottleneck in the middle of that. We want to help Christians and churches, help churches send Christians with the gospel to billions of people who need to hear it. And this is what we exist for. And so the accountability is to the mission we have with Southern Baptist Churches in particular, to partner with them, to empower men and women taken as going as missionaries with the gospel to them. So that's the way I mean high accountability. But I'd be glad to answer a question about transparency. We certainly have every desire to continue to be transparent with members of the media. Our trustee meetings are open to the public. Our plenary session board meetings, we had one yesterday. The conclusion of our board meeting is open to the public. In addition, meetings of any trustee standing committee, any trustee affinity group committee are also open to any member of the media on a background rules basis. The trustee board obviously reserves the right to call any plenary session and any trustee committee meeting into executive session to discuss matters requiring confidentiality, but that does not happen by any means at every meeting. So I know the personnel and trustees of the IMB, and we have policies in place just to say we want to work with members of the media to enable them to do, you all to do accurate, complete, well-balanced reporting. And this is even, hopefully this conversation is even one more evidence of that.
Okay, thank you. Sebastian, you outlined at the town hall this morning that we really did look at lots of options of what to do in getting to this financial place. We put great names and leadership was done. And so could you give us just a thumbnail of looking at, you know, why don't we just suspend appointments, or why don't we just offer lower salaries, or, you know, why should we focus on reducing the numbers?
Thanks, Wendy, and appreciate the question. You know, obviously one of the first things that's going to come to people's mind is what other options did you consider? What framework did you use to consider them? How did you analyze this? And so all of these different options, we've considered many in terms of potentially suspending or reducing appointments, different funding models, different ways to maybe solve the financial crisis that we find ourselves in. And really what I want to say is the framework we use to evaluate them is to really look at, of the different options, as we look at how can we get, what's the best first step we can take towards short-term financial responsibility and long-term organizational stability, what should be the option that we narrow to first. And we looked at really two variables. One would be taking a look at is the option feasible? Is it something, you know, you can think, is it something that we can implement? Is it something that we can actually do and make happen and do it in short order? Because as we've mentioned, our reserves are such that we have about 4 months of contingency reserves. So every 6 months we go without taking action, we lose another month of reserves. And so we need to act deliberately and quickly. And so we need to think from a feasibility perspective, can we implement the plan quickly? And the other variable, and if you think about feasibility, that's really thinking about kind of qualitative analysis. So knowing the organization, knowing our capabilities, and knowing other external factors. The other variable we really wanted to look at is, will it have financial impact? How does it affect our cash flow, our monthly, what we bring in minus what we spend, and how does it affect our reserves? So we need to look at both of those and analyze them. And that second one really is quantitative analysis. It's building a financial model. It's looking at a deep level of, if we do this, how does it affect things, not just next year, but into multiple years? From a cash flow perspective, and then also how does it affect our reserves? What's going to happen to our reserves based on different scenarios? And so as we look at, again, the feasibility and the financial impact of the different options, that's how we've ended up on the one we've chosen. And so again, without getting into all the details of all of them, the one I will point out is somebody said, well, what about suspending appointments for the next few years? We actually have to suspend appointments for 3 consecutive years, literally send no people. And the challenge, again, with that is we still have a reserve issue, and then, of course, we have a huge credibility issue with the churches we serve. And so as we think through these different options, we always need to consider feasibility and financial impact.
We want to honor your time, and we have a few more questions that have come in. Some of you are sending questions right now, and we may not be able to get to those, but we will take as much time. David and Sebastian have other commitments, so we do need to wrap up right at 1 o'clock. David, as we draw down our number of personnel, are we going to decide strategically to stop working with some of the people groups, or how are we going to prioritize engaging them? This is a challenge, I'm sure, for our field leadership.
It is a challenge that could cause us to ask a lot of questions, but they're good questions. Again, we know that these realities, while they're obviously financial, they're ultimately spiritual, and we trust that God is sovereignly orchestrating all things for the glory of His name. And so we want to walk in step with His Spirit and ask those questions. So based on, again, information we don't know right now, but we will discover in the days to come, based on who decides to step into a role beyond the IMB, and what will that mean for this particular work among that particular people group? And we'll have to ask questions about, do we continue to work in the same way there? Do we transition our work in some way? Has this providentially, has the work gotten to a point where it's not even needed in the same way that it was before?
there's so many different factors that go into that that all of our healed leaders around the world will be wrestling through in good ways over the coming days. And so I certainly don't have a forecast for what all that looks like, but I'm trusting in the sovereignty of God and the leadership of the Spirit of God in the middle of that.
Has there been any conversation with NAM leadership to think about placing these retiring missionaries in the stateside Sin City or other positions here in the U.S.?
We have had numerous conversations on a big picture level with the North American Mission Board about increased partnership on a variety of different levels. Not specifically about this. I do hope. I know we've already heard. We asked our personnel just to give feedback today and the days to come. In light of all this news and the process through it. And we've already heard from one of our personnel who just recently made a similar move, who things are going well, but since the Lord on the field, but since the Lord was leading them into a place of ministry in North America and stepped into that role, and just, it was encouraging us as leadership as we think through the difficulties with a step like this, but also the opportunities that are going to open up in work among unreached peoples in North America, in work in churches in North America. There's, I trust, all kinds of ways that God will creatively and sovereignly lead and direct 600 to 800 people in the days to come. And because of our ongoing and growing partnership with NAM, I'm certain there are possibilities that may unfold along those lines. We don't have a formal plan for integrating certain people in certain positions with them.
Sebastian, another question that you can answer of these properties that we sell, there's a challenge sometimes of how we, even if we can sell them, what we can do with the money.
Yeah, I mean, it's... The organization has just been blessed to have resources such that we have been able to keep so many people on the field for so many years, despite some of these expenses. From a property perspective, it's not straightforward to sell a property. So let me just give you one example. So one property we are attempting to sell overseas might yield millions of dollars, but in order to do that, we have had to change our charter such that we're able to even do that, and then find a willing buyer, and then once we do that, get government approval. And even once we do all that, there's still limitation to how much money we can repatriate. And so as we think about property sales, most of the easy ones have been sold from that perspective. We're now at a point where there's very few to sell where we can quickly repatriate the capital from those property sales.
Thanks, Sebastian. That the questions I received from you, except maybe a two or three that have come in that I've not been able to pay attention to while I've been leading this conference, but I think that's all. Let me just see. We have just a couple of minutes. See, we'll be able to take one or two questions from the from you.
This is David Roach with Baptist Press. I have a question about the budget shortfall. Were the budget shortfalls the result of inaccurate revenue projections or other factors? Like, for instance, did you expect to get $175 million from Lonnie Moon last year and then that just didn't come through?
Yeah, I would say it was a function of we had a goal for $175 million from Lonnie Moon, and we didn't meet that goal. So it's, to some extent, as simple as that. Now, I will say, as David outlined before, that accounts for 21 of the kind of 39 million. The other 18 million is because we have been able to offset some of our field expenses through property sales. So those are really the two pieces of it. One is a shortfall in revenue or dollars that come in that are given, and the other is an offset against expenses.
Well, I guess perhaps I probably asked the question in an unhelpful way. I mean, maybe not just last year, but year after year, have you been surprised by the shortfalls in the revenue, or was it something that leaders kind of saw coming year after year, but just hadn't yet figured out the right way to deal with it?
I think it's been, again, on the expense side, I think we've had a plan in place to reduce our expenses over time through more limited appointments and natural attrition. So that's on the expense side. On the revenue side, I think there was a plan in place. I think that plan was to engage churches with the need and elevating the goal and praying and trusting that churches would respond to that goal. So there was a plan in place, but yes, it was missed. And so, you know, when that happens for a few years in a row, obviously we come to a point where we need to kind of alter the course of what that plan was that was in place.
Okay, let me see if there's a question from someone else, and this will be the last one.
This is Kevin Parker in New Mexico. Will the restructuring include some kind of plans to keep these kind of shortfalls from happening again and putting us in this place in the future? What do you foresee there?
Yeah, I think we definitely need to take a look at it and make sure we're not in a place. And I'll say we haven't had thorough discussions of what that might look like, so I don't want to say we settled on a direct path, but I would say from a philosophical perspective, you know, we'll need to set our reserves at a responsible level, which in our we've already kind of have bylaws that say about 6 months is what that might look like, and then very simply to say spend at a level that is equivalent to how much money we bring in from giving. And so as we put those two things in place, you know, spend within our means and have responsible reserves, I would say that's kind of the framework for determining how fast or slow we can grow in the years to come.
Sebastian, thank you. David, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for this press conference. And I would just say, as you write and communicate about what's going on at the IMB, we would encourage you to encourage those with whom you influence to give generously, because there's still a lost world out there. Just some technical matter, we will have an audio file of this, and so if you want or would like a copy of that, Julie just told me we'll just send it to all of you who are on the list, so you will have a copy of the audio file. When, Julie?
This afternoon.
This afternoon, so you can go back and listen. Thank you all. Take care.